Hi, Dave Emery here. This is, for the record, program number 884. What the hell does Dave Emery mean by the Earth Island Boogie, Part 1, subtitled Turkish Taffy, Part 4? This program is being recorded on January 3rd of the year 2016. Happy New Year. I don't know how happy it is going to be. However, it is a new year, and just as in, for the record, 883, we took a look back at years past and took measure of just how far down we have sunk in the years since JFK jawboned the steel industry into rolling back a price increase. We are going to look ahead in this program. And we are going to take a look at not only what is going on in Turkey, but in the next program, what the hell, and for the record, 885, what the hell does Dave Emery mean by the Earth Island Boogie Part 2? We are going to dolly the camera out, so to speak, and take a look at the Earth Island as a whole. And we're going to take a look at elements of resonance between what is going on in Ukraine, what is going on in China and elsewhere in Asia, and what is going on in the Middle East. This program, of course, as the title indicates, will be focusing largely on Turkey. And yet, the subtitle, Turkish Taffy Part 4, is the sequencing of a nickname for programs, or really the names of programs, that I did back in 2011. When the Arab Spring was going on, and I called it, correctly as it turns out, the Muslim Brotherhood Spring, the media punditry was not only celebrating what was taking place, saying, oh, this is wonderful, and the Middle East is going to bloom with flowering democracies, and the source of their wishful thinking, really, was Erdogan's Turkey. By the way, I have in the past been mispronouncing the Turkish president's name. T-A-Y-Y-I-P is his first name. E-R-D-O-G-A-N is his last name. I'm told it is actually pronounced Erdogan. I've been initially pronouncing it Erdogan, and then Erdogan. I guess it's actually Erdogan, according to people who are natives of Turkey and speak the language. So Erdogan actually is E-R-D-O-G-A-N. When the Arab Spring was going on, again, there was a great deal of media punditry saying that, oh, you know, with the overthrow of the Tunisian government and the ouster of Gaddafi in Libya, that took a little more than just an Arab Spring. That took a bombing campaign. And with the overthrow of Mubarak in Egypt, we would see a flowering of popular democracy in the Middle East. And the template that was going to serve as the role model for that was Erdogan's Turkey, which was described as a moderate Islamic democracy, which just goes to show how absolutely bleeping wrong you can be. There was nothing moderate or democratic about Erdogan's Turkey. And in fact, in For the Record programs 737, 738, and 739, Turkish Taffy Parts 1, 2, and 3, I noted that the, quote, moderate, unquote, government of Erdogan was directly evolved from the Bank al-Taqwa nexus. I will talk a little more about Bank al-Taqwa later in the program, and that it was an extension of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood is an Islamic fascist organization that was allied with the Axis in World War II. It then jumped to elements of Western intelligence, the CIA, BND, and MI6 in particular, and was used as anti-communist cadre during the Cold War for suppressing socialist or communist forces in the Arab and Muslim world during the Cold War. Ultimately, during the last phase of the Cold War, the direct offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, and the Afghan Mujahideen helped to defeat the Soviet Union in Afghanistan after they were deliberately lured in by, as we looked at in among other shows, for the record, 872. Of course, ultimately, the Afghan Mujahideen morphed into Al-Qaeda, and they have turned out to be less than friendly to the U.S. and elsewhere to the West. I have noted elsewhere, too, that ISIS appears to be yet another offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood. More about ISIS in weeks to come. We are going to be taking a look in this program at Erdogan's Turkey. And finally, being a baby boomer, I recall vividly something I used to really enjoy when I was a kid growing up, and that was the many science fiction and monster movies that were extant in the 1950s and 1960s. And there was a point in many of those movies where you would see little flashes of the monster at some point, or see the monster's footprints or the victims or the reaction shots of the faces of the victims as the monster rose up before them and was going to kill them. Then there is a certain point in the movie where the monster, whether it's a giant octopus or a reincarnated dinosaur that came to life because of nuclear testing or whatever, and it rises up out of the ocean or comes up out of the jungle or whatever, and we see the entire monster for the first time. Basically, Erdogan in Turkey has done that in recent months, and we're going to be taking a look at this moderate Islamic democracy, unquote, and what it really has become and is doing. It is not moderate. It most assuredly is Islamic. It is a direct outgrowth of the Muslim Brotherhood, and Erdogan is assuming all of the fascist character that characterized the Muslim Brotherhood, which is not a moderate organization at all. Although we won't be getting into it in this program, we have in the past noted that the Muslim Brotherhood is enamored to the transnational corporate community because of its corporatist economics. And it has been backed by the West in part because of the corporatist economics and also because of its utility as proxy warriors against their enemies or perceived enemies. It was used against the Soviet Union. It was used against the former Yugoslavia in the Balkans. It has been used in Chechnya and elsewhere in the Caucasus against Russia, and there is every indication that that continues to be the case. Indeed, as we look back at the cover-up of Operation Green Quest on March 20th of 2002, many of the terrorist fronts, funding fronts in the U.S. that had been used to fund the Afghan Mujahideen, that had been used to fund Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and later the Mujahideen in the Balkans and Chechnya, were busted by the FBI and the Treasury Department. These elements were inextricably linked to, on the one hand, the Bank al-Taqwa, about which we will have more to say later, and also Grover Norquist and Karl Rove's Islamic Free Market Institute, which, of course, harkens directly back to the corporatist economics of the Muslim Brotherhood. I've seen cover-ups and I've seen failures of media diligence, none more spectacular than the failure to take note of Operation Green Quest. Talat Othman, who was a director of George W. Bush's Harkin Energy and who was a close personal friend and political advisor of both George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush, and who gave a Muslim benediction at the Republican convention, and who also was the managing director of Grover Norquist's Islamic Free Market Institute. Again, note the name, note Grover Norquist, he interceded with then-Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill on behalf of the individuals and institutions raided by Operation Green Quest. Paul O'Neill was fired before the year was out, and the Operation Green Quest was fundamentally suppressed. Youssef Nava, a former German intelligence agent, and the head of the bank, Al Taqwa, basically had charges dismissed against him because the Bush administration, not surprisingly, did not turn over key documents that were needed for his prosecution. And Samuel Arian, a minor deity to the so-called progressive sector, also got off on many of the criminal charges facing him because, again, of some hanky-panky by the Bush Justice Department. The judge basically put a direction, gave the jury a directive that they could only find Samuel Arian guilty of financing terrorism if they could prove that monies that he had raised for Palestinian Islamic Jihad, an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood, were actually used for to finance terrorist acts. And, of course, that is basically impossible. You would have to, well, it is impossible. Ultimately, he copped a plea, and he refused to testify against the International Institute of Islamic Thought, one of the institutions that was raided in Operation Green Quest, and that looms very large indeed in the background of, among other incidents, the disappearance of Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 in the spring of 2014. And it also looms in the background of the downing of MH Flight 17 as well in the Ukraine. I think we are now in the position to view why Operation Green Quest was covered up for the most part. Certainly the Bush administration and people like Karl Rove and Grover Norquist did not want the bad publicity, and indeed they could have been indicted and even faced the death penalty. But beyond that, the powers that be, the transnational corporations and their associated political and national security elites, are going to continue to promote the Muslim Brotherhood and its combat cadre. Groups like the Afghan Mujahideen morphed into Al-Qaeda, groups like the Chechnyan terrorists and combatants, and in all probability groups like ISIS as well. Again, their utility as proxy warriors and the corporatist economics of the Muslim Brotherhood endeared them to the powers that be. And this is yet another example of what the brilliant Peter Lavenda termed weaponized religion. And we continue to see the application of weaponized Islam all over the Earth Island. Now, again, forgive me, veteran listeners, because the Earth Island just isn't one of those terms that most people know. You talk about the Earth Island or the World Island to the average American, and they'll think you're talking about a theme park, and that's just not the case. The Earth Island, or World Island, as you will see it, is a term that geopoliticians have minted. It refers to that giant landmass stretching from the Straits of Gibraltar all the way across Europe, all the way across the Middle East, all the way across Russia, the former Soviet Union, China, and India. It encompasses the vast bulk of the world's landmass. It controls, or it encompasses the vast bulk of the world's natural resources, oil in particular. And across the middle of the Earth Island is a vast stretch of Muslim population. Control of the Earth Island has long been seen by geopolitical thinkers as the key to world domination. And beginning in the early 20th century, Western colonial and imperial powers, initially Imperial Germany in World War I, but then later Nazi Germany, ultimately the U.S. and the Federal Republic of Germany, have promoted weaponized Islam and the Muslim population of the Earth Island as a vehicle for conquering that all-important landmass, or controlling that all-important landmass.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
And I would note that Turkey is both an Islamist country and a NATO country, and its geopolitical position, its geographical position, I should say, places it in a fundamentally important part of the Earth Island. It is a key to the access to the Black Sea. It is proximate to Europe. It is proximate to Africa and the Middle East, and it is proximate to Asia and Eurasia as well. The positioning of Turkey makes it very, very important. Plus, Turkey was the seat of the Ottoman Empire, the last caliphate that existed in the Muslim world. And one of the things that I have noted in a number of programs, For the Record 723 and others, and most recently in For the Record 878 and 879, is the growing confluence between the Muslim Brotherhood-derived Islamist movement and the Neo-Ottoman movement, which is gaining momentum in Turkey and among the so-called outside Turks. The Ottoman Empire was very wide, and there are Turkophone Muslim peoples in many places other than Turkey. Some of them are in parts of Russia and elsewhere in the former Soviet Union. Some of them are in China. Some of them are in now what is now Syria. And Erdogan of Turkey has been moving to a certain extent, at least, to certainly glorify and perhaps ideally recreate in part at least the Ottoman Empire. He has been quite explicit about his neo-Ottomanism. He also has been, and his government have been quite explicit about their Islamism as well. In past programs and in future programs, we will be looking at what I believe is a major goal of the transnational corporations and their associated national security and political elites, and that is using the Islamist and neo-Ottoman movements and pan-Turkish movements as proxy warriors to break up Russia, break up China, and ultimately, I suspect, to establish something of a neo-caliphate or a neo-Ottoman caliphate in Eurasia and the Middle East. This would carve up a large part of Russia. It would appropriate the petroleum-producing parts of Russia in the Caucasus. And this would also carve up China and their all-important Xinjiang province, which also, surprise, surprise, is rich in natural resources, petroleum in particular. I think that is the ultimate goal, and I think that the confluence between Islamism and neo-Ottomanism is the goal there. I think some of the things that they had planned on doing are going awry somewhat. We'll talk about what is admittedly not only a sophisticated conspiracy theory, but one that I think has a conspiracy within the conspiracy, because whereas the CIA and other U.S.-based transnational corporations are envisioning the Islamists as proxy warriors and as instituting corporatist economics in the Muslim world, which is more than a sixth of the world's population, the Earth Island in particular, they are also very useful in producing political reaction all over the West. Just take a look at what's going on in Europe. Take a look at Donald T. Trump here in the U.S. as well, and the other Republicans as well. However, I think that what I call the underground Reich and Germany are ultimately going to run a game. In fact, I think they are running a game on the West. More about that in weeks to come. As I mentioned, just like in those 1950s and early 60s horror movies, where at some point the giant octopus comes up out of the water right next to the boat, and you know, the hero and the girl scream and they paddle like crazy to get away from the giant octopus, Well, that giant octopus that is Tayyip Erdogan is now showing his true nature. Bearing witness to that, the Huffington Post of January 2nd of 2016, an article by John A. Tures, T-U-R-E-S, it's no surprise that Turkey's Erdogan likes Adolf Hitler's government. It reads in part as follows. Late Friday afternoon, reports circulated that Erdogan expressed admiration for Adolf Hitler's Nazi government. If it was a statement made by a democratic figure, it would be treated as a gaffe or a bad joke made in poor taste. But for the authoritarian Erdogan, it's a rare instance of his honesty, showing how the strong man really feels. Business Insider reported on the links Erdogan made between his vision of the new Turkish government that he is pushing for and Hitler's regime. Quote, asked on his return from a visit to Saudi Arabia late on Thursday whether an executive presidential system was possible while maintaining the unitary structure of the state, he said, quote, there are already examples in the world. You can see it when you look at Hitler's Germany. There are later examples in various other countries, he told reporters, according to a recording broadcast by the Dogan News Agency, or Dogan, D-O, capital D-O-G-A-N. Skipping down. Of course, in Erdogan's Hitler-esque state, it would be a crime to suggest that Erdogan admired Hitler. Ironically, you could even be marched off to prison for suggesting that Erdogan is authoritarian. Parenthetically, it is a crime in Turkey to insult the president. Does not sound democratic to you? I mean, what could be more democratic than putting people in prison for insulting the president? Continuing. In fact, Erdogan's government has arrested many people, including journalists and law enforcement officials accused of uncovering evidence of corruption or accusing him of authoritarian actions. He even targeted people living in the USA who were critical of him. Erdogan's excuse for such actions is that he claims his enemies are, quote, terrorists, unquote. Turkey's social media, one of the few unregulated sources of news in Erdogan's government, immediately went into high gear, according to the New York Times. Let's do a close comparison between Hitler and Erdogan, one person wrote on Twitter. The only difference is that Hitler was a bit shorter, unquote. People also shared a photoshopped picture of Hitler with Mr. Erdogan's face superimposed on it. On a visit to Turkey during their June election, I found that the overwhelming majority of people I met really liked their democratic system. Many did not like Erdogan, but they were afraid to say anything. Of those who did, half asked me to keep it anonymous, while the other half said they would be arrested anyway, and it didn't matter if I used their names. Then there is an article that is in the printed description for the record, 884. That should be available later this evening, today being January 3rd of 2016. It is by the New York Times. The writer is Ceylan, C-E-Y-L-A-N, Yeginsu, Y-E-G-I-N-S-U. I am probably mispronouncing that name. This is from the New York Times of January 1st of 2016. And predictably, Turkey says Hitler comment by President Erdogan was distorted. And it has a bunch of pro forma denials, really altogether predictable, saying no, he actually meant that it was a system could be abused. Well, it really is. It's an incoherent apology. You can read it for yourself. But as the contributing editor who posts under the name of Terrafractal, P-T-E-R-R-A-F-R-A-C-T-Y-L, noted, basically this pro forma dance, rhetorical dance that was engaged in by Erdogan and the Turkish government, basically threw cold water on the very administrative changes that he was proposing. He is proposing to create a strong presidency in Turkey. And then he said, Well, it could actually be abused. And so I didn't mean that it was good. I'm saying that it actually could be something that could be very bad. It really is something that is begging the question. I guess you could call it, instead of checks and balances, bounced checks and imbalances, because he is basically making the point that the very types of authoritarian changes that he was proposing could be abused. It's an argument against the very constitutional overhaul that he is championing. And I don't think that his comment was at all errant, and I don't think that this frankly clumsy and contradictory denial by Erdogan and the rest of the Turkish government can be taken at face value. As we're going to go into the actual derivation of Erdogan's Justice and Development, or AKP, party, it comes from the Refah, or Welfare Party, of Necmettin Erbakan, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, that in turn is directly evolved from the Bank al-Taqwa. And the Bank al-Taqwa is something about which we will have more to say in just a minute. It was at the very epicenter of the Operation Green Quest raids and is directly evolved from Nazi Germany and from the weaponized Islam that was implemented by Hitler. People like the Grand Mufti, Haji Amin al-Husseini, and François Genoux, both of whom we spoke about. We've spoken about both at great length in these programs. We spoke about them at great length in our discussions with the brilliant Peter Lavenda about his landmark book, The Hitler Legacy. More about the Erdogan government. This is from, and this is interesting, this is from an English language version of a Turkish newspaper called Zaman, Z-A-M-A-N. Its English language version is Today's Zaman, Z-A-M-A-N. And interestingly, this is a Gulenist paper. It is controlled by the Fethullah Gulen organization. We will have more to say about that next week. That is an international Islamic movement that used to be one of Erdogan's closest political allies in Turkey. Fethullah Gulen is a Turkish cleric who lives in Philadelphia, and the Fethullah Gulen organization has been criticized as Islamist and extremist by various Eurasian governments and defended in the U.S. as moderate and democratically oriented by, among other people, Graham E. Fuller, former CIA station chief in Kabul, when the Islamists were used as proxy warriors against the Soviet Union, and also someone who has numerous connections to the Chechen milieu that was implicated in the Boston Marathon bombing. Today's Zaman, though, had a very interesting article in October 28th of 2015, this by a man, Ihsan Yılmaz, I-H-S-A-N, last name capital Y-A-L-M-A-Z. And again, I'm probably mispronouncing these Turkish names. You just have to bear with me. And for those people who may have thought back in 2011, oh, there goes Dave again. He thinks all Muslims are fascists, which is not true. He doesn't support the Arab Spring, which is true. It's not that I hold a brief for the likes of Gaddafi or Bashar al-Assad or Hosni Mubarak. But there's an old Texas expression. There's nothing like stepping in a cow flop to make you realize just how nice tripping over a stone can be. And for those of you who may have thought I was off base with my discussion of the Turkish AKP party being an Islamic fascist party, let's note Ihsan Yılmaz's column in Today's Zaman of October 28th of last year, 2015. This before Erdogan came out basically with a de facto endorsement of Adolf Hitler's government.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Again, from Today's Zaman of 10/28/2015. About 2 months ago, I published a piece here titled Rise of Fascism and green shirts in Turkey. Some of you might have found it a little bit exaggerated. After the unconstitutional conquest of IPAC Media Group TV stations and newspapers by the Justice and Development, or AKP, figures, let me revisit my piece and elaborate on it further. I'm then going to go into his definition of fascism. I would note that, as is generally the case, he does not go into the corporatist connections of fascism. Mussolini, who coined the term, defined fascism as corporatism. As he put it, il fascismo e il corporatismo. Continuing with Ihsan Yılmaz's analysis, however, I gave a definition of fascism in the piece and wrote that, quote, fascism is a form of political behavior marked by obsessive preoccupation with community decline, humiliation, or victimhood, and by compensatory cults of unity, energy, and purity, in which a mass-based party of committed nationalist militants working in uneasy but effective collaboration with traditional elites abandons democratic liberties and pursues with redemptive violence without ethical or legal restraints goals of internal cleansing and external expansion. Recalling briefly one of the points that we made with Peter Lavenda, a driving force of fascism, and we went into this in a big way in For the Record 882, is the preoccupation with a mythical and much better bygone past. You know, the good old days, yes, the good old days, before they discovered the germ theory of disease or indoor plumbing or anything else. The preoccupation with an idealized, mythical past and a desire to return to something that never really existed, and doing so by purging the corruptors, whoever they may be. For European and American fascists, it's blacks, Jews, Muslims, immigrants, darkies, gypsies, whoever. For the Islamic fascists, it's the infidels and Christians and, of course, the Jews. Always good there. And note also that here Yılmaz talks about external expansion. More about that in a minute. Continuing with his piece, I then added that, quote, it's a type of newly emerging black shirts, the paramilitary group of Mussolini, and brown shirts, Hitler's paramilitary mobs. The primary purposes of the brown shirts were providing protection for Nazi rallies and assemblies, disrupting the meetings of opposing parties, fighting against the paramilitary units of the opposing parties, and intimidating Slavic and Romani citizens, unionists, and Jews, unquote. The AKP version should, of course, be called the Green Shirts. Then I warned that, again quoting, the opposition media has been threatened. Samanyolu TV, Zaman, Bugun TV, and the Bugun Daily could directly be seized on baseless grounds of terrorism. The AKP is calculating that not many people in Turkey and in the West would be bothered about it because of these media outlets' affiliation with the Hizmet movement. Well, I was wrong on one point. Despite my pessimistic expectation, the opposition in Turkey, which amounts to 60% of the vote, is up in arms and strongly behind the IPAC media group. This may even be a first in Turkey and wonderful news for the consolidation of democracy in the medium run. But let me return to my warning that the AKP had been trying to establish an Islamist fascist regime in Turkey. As you can see, it is trying to destroy all the opposition media outlets one by one, by sheer police force, and by injuring journalists. It is wrong to expect that whatever is happening in Turkey must be identical to 1930s Italy and Germany in order to describe what is happening in Turkey as the emergence and rise of fascism. There are, of course, spatial and temporal differences. Yet the general expectations of fascists are similar. relying on popular support, trying to create a one-man regime, and suppressing the opposition not just with punitive and ideological state apparatuses, but also paramilitaristic pseudo-civilian youth organizations. The fact that Acting Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoglu has been seen shoulder to shoulder with the chief of the AKP youth branch, who raided the Hürriyet daily along with his comrades and caused physical harm, is a testament to this phenomenon. And then Yılmaz goes on to offer some elements of optimism. Interesting, he said that in Turkey, the army is seen as a last bulwark against a fascist Islamic dictatorship. However, Erdogan cleaned out the leadership, the general staff and officer corps of the Turkish army, installing some of his own people. And I would note that the Turkish army is not only now, the Turkish military is not only engaging in unabashed provocations like the shootdown of the Soviet SU or the Russian SU-24, but also they have now sent troops into Iraq, ostensibly to fight the Daesh or ISIS or ISIL, but in all probability to continue Turkey's war against the Kurds. Note that what Yılmaz talked about with external expansion. Turkey is also supporting the Turkmen in northern Syria, and they are supporting the Uyghurs in China as well, using Grey Wolf, National Action Party youth cadre in both instances. We're going to take a look now at the derivation of the Turkish AK Party of Erdogan. It evolved directly from the Refah Party, R-E-F-A-H, which means welfare in Turkish, of Nekmeten, N-E-C-M-E-T-T-I-N, Erbakan, E-R-B-A-K-A-N, who was the mentor, the political mentor, to Tayyip Erdogan. And again, I'm mispronouncing these names. From Deutsche Welle of April 23rd of 2003, talking about the evolution from Refah to AKP. Mili Gorush, M-I-L-I-G-O-R-U-S, Germany's largest Islamic association, recently gained the official support of the Turkish government despite being watched by German intelligence services due to alleged extremist leanings. On April 19th, Turkey's religious conservative government ordered its embassies to offer the Islamische Gemeinschaft Mili Gorush, or IGMG, their support. The group formed in 1985 in Cologne to support Turkish nationalism and oppose the separation of state and religion, has long been criticized by German officials as being anti-Semitic and against liberal Western values. Skipping down. The decision by the Turkish foreign minister to support Mili Gorush comes only 2 weeks after an agreement between Germany and Turkey on combating organized crime incensed many members of Turkey's ruling AK party because it included Mili Gorush with groups like the Kurdish terrorist outfit PKK. Since many AK members have ties to Islamic religious groups, Gül, that's Abdullah Gül, the then Turkish foreign minister, Abdullah Gül was compelled to say he did not consider Mili Gorush a terror organization. Skipping down. Some observers say the attempt to reform its public image, that is to say Mili Gorush, could be at least partly linked to the rise of Turkish Prime Minister Tayyip Erdogan and his AK party. Coming to power in a landslide victory last year, Erdogan styles his party as a modern, conservative group based on Muslim values. He has distanced himself from former mentor Nekmetin Erbakan, who founded the Islamic-influenced Welfare Party. Last two sentences again. Coming to power in a landslide victory last year, Erdogan styles his party as a modern, conservative group based on Muslim values. He has distanced himself from former mentor Nekmetin Erbakan, who founded the Islamic-influenced Welfare Party. What we're going to do now is to review how Nekmeten Erbakan not only introduced Ahmet Huber, one of the directors of the Bank Altaqua and a protege of not only the Grand Mufti, but also someone who was very close to François Janoux, about whom we will say more later. He introduced him to not only Jean-Marie Le Pen of the French Fascist National Front, but also Necmettan Erbakan was instrumental, and his Rafah party was instrumental in getting Ahmed Huber made a shareholder in the Bank Altaqua, which had a bank account that funded Al-Qaeda. It had an unlimited line of credit. By the way, that was that account, Al-Qaeda account in the Bank Altaqua, was maintained by a guy named Ali bin Musalim, who was under indictment in the early 80s in the U.S. for conspiring to corner the silver market, which places him in direct conspiratorial association with the late Nelson Bunker Hunt of the very powerful Texas Hunt family. Reading now from Dollars for Terror, the United States and Islam by Richard Labavière, copyright 2000 by Algora Publishing. A second photograph in which Adolf Hitler is talking with Heinrich Himmler hangs next to those of Necmettan Erbakan and Jean-Marie Le Pen, head of the Fascist National Front. These pictures are on the wall of Ahmed Huber's home. Erbakan, head of the Turkish Islamist Party Rafah, turned to Ahmed Huber for an introduction to the chief of the French Party of the Far Right. Exiting from the meeting, which took place in September of 1995, Huber's two friends supposedly stated that they, quote, share the same view of the world, unquote, and expressed, quote, their common desire to work together to remove the last racist obstacles that still prevent the union of the Islamist movement with the national right of Europe. Lastly, above the desk is displayed a poster of the Imam Khomeini. The meeting changed my life, Huber says, with stars in his eyes. For years after the meeting in the Federal Palace in Bern, Ahmed Huber published a European press review for the Iranian leaders, then for the Turkish Rafah Party of Necmettin Erbakan. Since the former lacked financial means, Huber chose to put his efforts to the service of the latter. An outpost of the Turkish Muslim Brothers, Rafah thus became Huber's principal employer, and it was through the intermediary of the Turkish Islamist Party that this former parliamentary correspondent became a shareholder in the Bank Altaqua. The driving force behind the Bank Altaqua, by the way, and the fellow who was meeting on a daily basis with Ahmed Huber, was François Janoux, who was not only financed the defense of Adolf Eichmann, but did the same thing for Klaus Barbie. He was the heir to the collected literary works and political last will and testament of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. A point we will take up later in this discussion, actually next week. I would note that the AK party of Necmettin Erbakan is very close to Germany and the EU.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
From GermanForeignPolicy.com of February 18th of 2011, the focus is on two particular aspects of Turkish policy. The first is that over the past few years, political Islam in Turkey has proven to be very cooperative with the EU. This is due to the economic rise of the conservative sectors of the Anatolian hinterland, which is organized within the Adalet, the Kalkinma Partisi, or AKP party, of Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan, and the ruling party in Ankara since 2002. The AKP has a clearly Islamist orientation. The Anatolian enterprises forming the backbone of the party have close economic ties in EU countries. It is on this basis that the AKP has established intensive ties to Western Europe and incorporated into its brand of political Islam a reorientation favorable to the EU. The party has since stood as a model for the possibility of Islamism having a pro-Western character. In fact, over the past few years, several North African Islamic forces, including sectors of the influential Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood, have been orienting themselves on the AKP. According to a recent study co-financed by the SPD-affiliated Friedrich Ebert Foundation, nearly two-thirds of the population in seven Arab nations, including Egypt, would be in favor of their countries adopting the Turkish model. Classic case of be careful what you wish for, you may get it. A pro-Western orientation of the Muslim Brotherhood, implicit in such a model, would also be very much appreciated in Western capitals. I would note here that we're going to review something from, for the record, 880. I would note that the chief of Turkish intelligence, a fellow named Hakan Fidan, H-A-K-A-N-F-I-D-A-N, described in the blog that we are going to read as being the closest political ally in Turkey of Tayyip Erdogan, basically came out more or less explicitly in support of ISIS, which Turkey is supposedly fighting against, but actually wounded ISIS fighters are being treated in Turkey. This is from AWD News of October 18th of 2015. Turkish intelligence chief: Putin's intervention in Syria is against Islam and international law. ISIS is a reality, and we are optimistic about the future. Hakan Fidan, the head of Turkey's National Intelligence Organization, known by the MIT acronym, has drawn a lot of attention and criticism for his controversial comments about ISIS. Skipping down. Mr. Hakan Fidan, Turkish president's staunchest ally, said, quote, "ISIS is a reality, and we have to accept that we cannot eradicate a well-organized and popular establishment such as the Islamic State. Therefore, I urge my Western colleagues to revise their mindset about Islamic political currents, put aside their cynical mentality, and thwart Vladimir Putin's plans to crush Syrian Islamist revolutionaries," and the Belu News Agency quoted Mr. Fidan as saying on Sunday. Fidan further added that in order to deal with a vast number of foreign jihadists craving to travel to Syria, it is imperative that ISIS must set up a consulate or at least a political office in Istanbul. He underlined that it is Turkey's firm belief to provide medical care for all injured people fleeing Russian ruthless airstrikes, regardless of their political or religious affiliation. Then it talks about ISIS fighters being treated in Turkey. Skipping down. Emil Hokayem, H-O-K-A-Y-E-M, a Washington-based Middle East analyst, said the Turkish Erdogan and his oil-rich Arab allies, parenthetically, that's Turkey, and that's Saudi Arabia and Qatar, have dual agendas in the war on terror, and as a matter of fact, they are supplying the Islamist militias with weapons and money. Thus, Russian intervention is considered a devastating setback for their efforts to overthrow Syrian secular president Assad. Hakayem, who was speaking via Skype from Washington, D.C., highlighted the danger of Turkish-backed terrorist groups and added that what is happening in Syria cannot be categorized as a genuine and popular revolution against dictatorship, but rather it is a chaos orchestrated by Erdogan, who is dreaming of reviving the infamous Ottoman Empire, unquote. I would note, and we're going to have to move relatively quickly here, one of the developments that has taken place is that Turkey has sent troops into Iraq. The actual number of troops is relatively small. However, the Iraqi government was not consulted before these troops were sent in, and they are less than thrilled with the fact that they are there. They have demanded that the troops be withdrawn. Basically, Erdogan and note Yılmaz's observation that fascism also involves external expansion. Erdogan basically said that, no, we're not going to withdraw the troops because even though it is Iraqi territory, Iraq does not have control of its own territory. From the Reuters of December 30th of 2015, an article by Saif, S-A-I-F, Hamid, H-A-M-E-E-D, and Eche Toskabe, E-C-E, T-O-K-S-A-B-A-Y. Iraqi PM says Turkey not respecting agreement to withdraw troops, reads in part. Iraq's prime minister accused Turkey on Wednesday of failing to respect an agreement to withdraw its troops from the country's north, and its foreign minister said if forced, Iraq could resort to military action to defend its sovereignty. Skipping down, Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi told his Turkish counterpart in a call on Wednesday that a Turkish delegation had promised to withdraw its troops, according to a statement from his media office. Skipping down, Ankara has acknowledged there was a, quote, miscommunication, unquote, with Baghdad over the deployment. It later withdrew some troops to another base inside the nearby autonomous Kurdistan region and said it would continue to pull out of Nineveh province, where Başika is located. But Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan said a total withdrawal is out of the question, and Abadi repeated to Turkish Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoglu on Wednesday that Baghdad had not approved the deployment. Speaking of Wednesday night, Davutoglu said Ankara respected Iraqi sovereignty, but that Baghdad had no control over a third of its own territory. If Baghdad wants to use force, they should use it against the Islamic State, Davutoglu added, and skipping down again. Iraqi Foreign Minister Ibrahim al-Jafari said earlier in the day that his government was committed to exhausting peaceful diplomatic avenues to avoid a crisis with Turkey, its northern neighbor, but insisted that all options remained open. If we are forced to fight and defend our sovereignty and riches, we will be forced to fight, he told reporters in Baghdad. The full article is in the written description for the record 884, which again will be published later today, today being January 3rd of 2016. The stated rationale for Turkey sending troops into Iraq is to fight against ISIS. However, as we have seen in numerous programs and including in that remarkable statement by the chief of Turkish intelligence, basically Turkey is in effect supportive of ISIS. And I would note that the troops also, many of them are going to be in the autonomous Kurdish region of Iraq. Turkey is engaged in an all-out war against the Kurds, including the Kurdish minority in Turkey. We are going to take a look next at something that will anticipate some of the discussion in For the Record 885 and also some of the things that we looked at in For the Record programs, number 819, For the Records 878 and 879. And that is not only the use of weaponized Islam, but specifically the affinity between Nazi Germany and weaponized Islam and its use as proxy warriors. I would note that although in the statement that I'm about to read. There was only discussion of using the Muslims against the British Empire. They also were of considerable value in fighting against first the Soviet Union, and now they are very much involved in fighting against Russia as well, both in Syria and also in Ukraine, as well as in Russia proper. An excerpt here, an article by Alexandra Del Valle, D-E-L-V-A-L-L-E, from Occidentalis blog of December 13th of 2004. The Testament of Adolf Hitler, Headquarters of the Führer, February 4th to April 2nd of 1945, containing a preface by François Genoux. Again, François Genoux, a key Nazi operative, financed the defenses of Adolf Eichmann and Klaus Barbie, also paid the expenses for Ayatollah Khomeini when he was in exile in France, and was the driving force behind the establishment of the Bank al-Taqwa. The Turkish Refah Party was the vehicle for Ahmet Huber's introduction to the Bank al-Taqwa. Huber, a protege of the Grand Mufti, and also Omar Amin von Leers, nay, Johann von Leers, who was in charge of anti-Semitic propaganda for Goebbels' propaganda ministry. François Genoux, again, heir to the collected literary works and political last will and testament of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. Adolf Hitler declared in his testament, reported by Martin Bormann, quote, "All of Islam vibrates at announcement of our victories. What can we do to help them? How can it be to our interest and our duty? The presence next to us of the Italians creates a malaise among our friends of Islam. It hinders us from playing one of our better cards, to support the countries oppressed by the British. Such a policy would excite enthusiasm throughout Islam. It is, in effect, a particularity of the Muslim world that what touches one, whether good or ill, is felt by all the others. The people ruled by Islam will always be nearer to us than France, in spite of the kinship of blood." Unquote. So again, from the last will and testament, basically political last will and testament of Adolf Hitler, that statement there of the utility of weaponized Islam and the Muslim world as proxy warriors for the Nazi cause. And I would note in our discussions of the Arab Spring, I mentioned that ultimately the very Muslim Brotherhood and Islamist elements that the West was installing in throughout the Middle East would turn on the West and ultimately destroy Israel and the U.S., Russia, and probably Britain and France to a considerable extent, as well as producing political reaction. Basically, a weaponized Muslim extension of Third Reich combatants. We're going to conclude by looking ahead to some of the discussion in upcoming and for the record 885, and also back to some of our discussions in 872, 878, and 879. From 872, here is Elizabeth Gould, and who I interviewed with her husband Paul Fitzgerald, the co-authors of Invisible History, Afghan's Untold Story, and Crossing Zero.
Here is another quote that we have on the attitude that these kinds of individuals have. The policy of guiding the evolution of Islam and of helping them against our adversaries worked marvelously well in Afghanistan against the Russians. The same doctrines can still be used to destabilize what remains of Russian power and especially to counter the Chinese influence in Central Asia.
That began Elizabeth Gould quoting Zbigniew Brzezinski. This concludes For the Record program number 884. What the hell does Dave Emery mean by the Earth Island Boogie, Part 1, subtitled Turkish Taffy, Part 4. This is being recorded on January 3rd of 2016. Happy New Year.